You're listening to the AFTN Soccer Show on CITR Radio, 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam Territory at the University of British Columbia.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Well, hello again there, friends in Whitecaps land, and welcome to the AFTN Soccer Show. For those of you listening on the podcast, this is episode 178. I'm Michael McCall.
I'm Steve Pander.
I'm Zachary Adam Meisenheimer.
We're going to bring an hour of chat on Whitecaps news, and the Whitecaps finally got into competitive action after what seemed like an eternity since the end of last season.
Well, when you miss the playoffs, usually it is.
Yeah, it kind of is. But the Whitecaps got back to competitive action on Wednesday. First leg of their CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinal at New York Red Bulls in New Jersey. 1-1 draw.
In front of a packed crowd.
Oh, it was hard to tell who was crowd, who was seat.
Yeah.
But a lot of plastic there, anyway, either way. But fantastic result for the Whitecaps, a 1-0 draw. Could have been better. Could have been a lot worse. Some ups, some downs. We're going to talk about all that. I mean, the big headline coming out of it is, as of right now, halfway through the tie, the Whitecaps have 1 foot in the final four. Semi-finals await. The crucial away goal from Kakutamani gave them the 1-0 draw. It's all to play for in the second leg at BC Place on Thursday, but it's also all in the Whitecaps' hands.
I personally think going into this game, I was predicting a draw, and I think that this was a perfect result, especially with the away goal. I think that's going to be huge for them. Like you said, it could have been worse. There were a number, especially right after the second half started.
Yeah, I mean, New York peppered the Whitecaps' defense for the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half in particular.
In the first minute, they earned the penalty, and that could have been really disastrous, but luckily it was one of the worst penalties ever taken.
Sasha Kleshton. Oh, what a bad, bad penalty that was. I think my dog, Predictapooch, could have taken a better penalty. He's way better with the ball, I have to say.
Yeah. I don't know, Sasha seemed pretty happy with it after he was smiling quite a bit.
I think he was just smiling because he realised how bad that was.
Yeah, but, I mean, that could have been bad. That could have got Red Bulls right in it. But it didn't take them much longer to get right in it.
Well, but the thing is, it shows how much the history of us playing Dead Bull and playing Dead Bull at Dead Bull Arena weighed on them, because obviously he did not want to go to either side of David Oestead, because Oestead, of course, had the double save against Bradley Wright Phillips last season, and two seasons ago, and so you could tell he was like, I need to go in the middle and play it safe. Oestead's going to jump. I'm going to go down the middle. But he hit it just so weakly and so poorly, and David read it well enough to leave his feet there and to make the block.
Well, David was going to the right side. Oestead was going to the right side, and then he had enough time, because it was hit so weakly, that he could stay there and put his leg
up. He had enough time to go and get a pie, have a quick pee, get back, and get down and save it. It was that bad a penalty. And it wasn't really that long ago on the show that I remember us talking about, is David Oestead ever going to save a penalty? He's just not going to be very good at saving a penalty. And now he just seems to be pulling them out left, right and centre. He has become an amazing shot stopper at penalties.
Is that four now, at least?
At least four, possibly more.
It felt, to be honest, the call, I understand why it was given, or, you know, yeah, I've seen those given before, but it felt like a little bit harsh, especially when you look at other fouls that happened later in the game, which probably could have or should have been given and weren't. But that was great resolve from David, and great to keep dead ball off the scoreboard for as long as possible.
Well, we talked about the goal that they almost scored, but of course before the halftime we scored the goal, the Mané goal, and I think that helped build the confidence, which didn't last long because the penalty call, but it really got him a good lift going into the half, and that was a good set piece off the corner.
Yeah, Kendall Waston got the first touch off the corner, and then Scooter got his head to it, and it went off the Deadpool player's chest or arm or body.
I think
body.
It was shoulder or something like
just
that.
Just completely surprised Robles, who was kind of rooted to the spot.
Yeah.
But it capped what was an excellent first-half performance by the Whitecaps. Heading into the game, during our live Mixlr podcast that we did on Wednesday as well, we talked about we didn't really know what kind of Whitecaps performance we were going to see. Were they going to just sit back and try and soak up the pressure, hit on the counter? Were they going to take the game to New York and use the pace that they had out wide with Mané and Davies? And it was the latter. But it wasn't just Mané and Davies. The front four, definitely the front three with Teixeira in there along with Mané and Davies, they interchanged wonderfully. Mm-hmm. 1 minute Davies was on the left, then he was on the right, then he's in the middle. Same with Mané, same with Teixeira, confused New York.
I think on three separate runs up the pitch at different times, within like 5-6 minutes, there was a different player. Each of them, like you said, Davies, Mané, Teixeira. So that was obviously the plan going in, to confuse him, to get different, like you get the speed of Mané, you get the shiftiness of Davies, you get the also the shiftiness and the kind of speed of Teixeira. So you get a different look almost every time for that right back or left back.
It was a great tactical plan. And yeah, in those first 5 to 10 minutes, things were so fluid in a positive way. It can become too fluid and not be a good thing. But I think in this game, I think it worked really well. In the first half, it worked really, really well. And I think, yeah, the New York defense had to be on their toes because they were getting a different look virtually every rush up field, run up field.
And if that's something that the Whitecaps are going to do all season, or at least to start the season until they get kind of found out, I'm looking forward to seeing that, because it's hard to defend and play against.
Even if you get found out about that, it's still going to, because you don't know when they're going to switch. You don't know when it's going to happen.
Great tactic.
And that's the thing, too. It wasn't like, we assume this was Robbo's instructions to the players, but it wasn't like Alex Ferguson, who back in the day would, like, literally the clock would hit the 15-minute mark or the 20-minute mark or whatever, and the wingers would swap sides. You know what I mean? Like, this was
very fluid.
Very fluid.
And talking to Robbo, we got a chance to get his audio from after the game. Friend of the show, Jonathan Tannenwald, at The Goalkeeper on Twitter, made the journey from Philly to New York for the game, New Jersey rather, and he sent us the audio. So let's hear Robbo's thoughts after that 1-0 draw against Red Bulls. And we're also going to hear some audio from Jordan Harvey and Shannon Williams.
Was this what you were expecting against the Red Bulls tonight? Even playing field almost out there against two teams that are just about to start their season?
Yeah, it's not ideal as both coaches have spoken about in pre-season preparation, but it's the same for both teams. I think the effort, I can only talk about my team, the effort, the application, the determination that we put in, especially when down to 10 men for the last half an hour, was phenomenal. And if you put the work in, you get the rewards. And today we got a little reward. We know there's a lot of work to do in the game, but we're fairly happy.
Hey, Carl.
Hi.
Given the result, a tie on the road, a goal on the road, and the fact, like you said, you know, the last 20 minutes you played with a man down.
Yeah.
Is this a victory? And you could tell us what the atmosphere of the locker room was like afterwards?
Yeah, they. If I'm being honest with you, and I think people who know me know I'm honest, they were actually disappointed that we conceded the goal, because when you put that work in, and, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, it was a great goal from it. It was a cross and it was a little ricochet, and obviously we know then that they've got an actual goal scorer in their ranks and he took his chance. But we maybe dodged a bullet in the with the penalty. So we were very lucky there. So maybe they deserve their goal. But again, we've been hit with injuries prior to this game. Obviously, we've got, there's one or two that will be missing next week as well. So if we're going to go through, we're going to go through against all odds. And that's what makes this game sweet.
I know you said the locker room was disappointed after this match, but going in 1-1 now to the home leg, have to feel a little bit in control of the series.
No. You know, we were in a decent position, but, you know, Red Bulls are a good team and they can score on the road. We know that. The objective today in our play was to try and get that goal. The way we set up with our players and personnel, we wanted to attack quickly, and I thought you saw it time and time again. I was actually disappointed that we only managed to score the one goal, because we got into some great situations with overloads of 3v2s and 4v3s, and we made wrong decisions. But that's what happens with young players, and you don't criticise them. You get back to work and try and give them pictures to make, you know, other decisions. And one game they'll get it right. Today, we got it right at times with the goal, but we obviously got it wrong at other times. But we'll continue to work with them, because, you know, there's some exciting talent, attacking talent out there on our side.
Feel fitness-wise, I know both of you guys pre-season, you know, have a little fatigue there at the end, or what do you feel?
I don't think so. There are times throughout a game where I make a run forward playing fullback and you get a little out of breath, but we put in a lot of work this offseason and this preseason, and we had three good games in Portland for that tournament, and I thought it prepared us very well for this, especially when we go down a man and we're defending like we did. I felt great about it.
What did you feel about your keeper's, you know, just the psyche of a couple years in a row? He loves to obviously stop PKs here in Red Bull Arena.
I don't think it's just Red Bull Arena. I really think he's been great with penalties since he's come into the Whitecaps. I don't know what he was prior to that. But last game, I think it was Wright Phillips. This game is Kleschen. I don't think it's a psyche thing. He just reads the game well. And he obviously made a big save for us and kept us in the game.
Awesome. How much of a challenge is the Thursday to Sunday turnaround playing two games in quick succession like that? Especially with all the injuries you got right now.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Phillies, honestly, I've been taking this preseason has gone by so quick. It's been so compact, and we've had a ton of games. And so I've thought about this one, and now that you bring up this question, obviously Philly's right after this next game, but honestly, this Champions League game is the biggest, so we need to prepare for that. I'm sure our manager will put out a lineup to compete and win and try to hopefully get on to the semis, and then you have to refocus and see, you know, who's ready, who's fit to go to that Philly game and start us off and hopefully get some momentum and carry us through the start of the regular season.
The crowd tonight is what it was, and I think people know it's still a growing competition. It's still something that people across MLS are learning about, but we've seen in Canada that it's a competition that has drawn some big crowds and gotten some buzz. What's the talk been like in Vancouver? Are people paying attention to this thing?
Oh, yeah. You know, I can tell you from, you know, a resident of Vancouver that it's all over the place, and fans are knowledgeable of it and understand the magnitude and the importance of this tournament. And, you know, the implications, and if we do make it to the semis, what a huge thing that is for the organization. So, you know, it's not an average fan in Vancouver. I think you have a knowledgeable fan that understands what this could do for our club.
Shannon Williams, how was tonight for you?
It was great. It was great to get my first official minutes in an important match, and hopefully, you know, can make a big impact on this team.
You talked about having some familiar faces in the locker room. Does that translate helping you on the field getting settled with these guys?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we have Giles from Houston, AJ, and Jordan from Philly, and it makes everything easier. They're guys that are going to look out for me and show me the ropes as quickly as possible, get me acclimated to Vancouver, and that's what you need when you're moving to a new city and a new country.
Not the worst place to live, though, is it?
No, it's beautiful. Unfortunately, I've only been there for about 7 days. We've been traveling so much, so excited to get back and kind of be there for a good stretch of time, kind of get my bearings a little bit better and figure out where I'm going to live and whatnot.
How good can this team be this year? Obviously, there's some injuries at the moment, but the Freddie Montero signing made a lot of news around the league. How good can these guys be?
This team can be, you know, a contender for all the things that we play for. Canadian Cup, this Champions League, the Shield, we just have to put everything together. We have experienced guys. We got guys that played for national teams. You know, Freddie's a big-time signing for us. It's a team that's ready to hit their stride and ready to get going. And, you know, if we can keep shutouts in the back, I know that our attackers can do some stuff. You saw a little bit of spurts from Kakuta and, you know, the 16-year-old tonight. And, you know, it's a bright future for the club, and I'm excited to be on it.
Last question. How much of a test is the Thursday to Sunday turnaround?
Yeah, it's definitely a tough one, but we've worked extremely hard in preseason. If anybody worked harder than us, then, you know, I feel sorry for them. So it's going to be a good test for us, and, you know, we'll get back, and all our staff will have us prepared.
So Carl Robinson and some Whitecaps there talking about Wednesday's 1-0 draw against the Red Bulls. And, yeah, I mean, we talked about Manny's goal just before we heard from Robbo there. But New York got back into it in the end in the second half with a fantastic finish from the always dangerous Bradley Wright Phillips.
Yes, but it shouldn't have got to that finish because there was a defensive breakdown.
You've heard Robbo say before, but on any goal, there's multiple areas where things have broken down. Yeah. I think one is the tracking back starting on our left side.
Yeah,
but then Harvey's not there in enough time to try and cut out the cross or put pressure, enough pressure on the guy putting the ball into the box. It then appears like Kendall has two men, and because Bradley Wright Phillips has sort of dropped off a bit, and Tim kind of has no one, it sort of looks like. Then you get a lucky bounce. So the cross comes in, and it bounces off the one guy and just falls to Wright Phillip, who just smashes it into the roof of the net.
Which Olstead wasn't too far away from stopping, too. He almost got a hand to it, but it was a very hard shot.
I mean, Parker kind of swung at the ball as it came in, I just don't feel he reacted quick enough off the rebound, but obviously wasn't expecting the rebound like that.
But so if you look at that, the holding midfielder was late coming back to it.
I mean, Tyler was hard to get
later on in the game. There wasn't a similar cross from the other side, and Laba did get back and cover for Nowitzki, who swifted.
It looked like Parker's missed swing was also because he was trying to figure out what was going on with positioning because of the two guys that were sort of in the area.
And on the whole, though, the defense wasn't horrible.
No.
It's not the worst we've seen, which might be their tagline for the season, I don't know. But, I mean, they did do better. Jake Nowinski didn't have as torrid a time as he had against Portland, but...
He did give up
the penalty. Hopefully that doesn't play in his mind too much. It was a big risk starting a rookie for his first pro start in one of the biggest games that the club's going to play the whole year. You do have to wonder if it's because Shannon Williams wasn't ready to go the whole 90, or did Nowinski just earn it with his preseason play?
Well, against Portland, Williams came on in the last 15, 20 minutes or so. In this game, he came on in the last 15, I think it was 75th minute when he came on. So clearly he probably isn't fit, or else I think he would start. But when he did come on, it seemed like they solidified a little bit better, the back line, and there were less errors at that time. But they had to solidify, too, because you got that red card.
Yeah.
I think in the 70th minute, with 20 minutes left.
Swinging legs with Parker to share with
swinging appendages.
Yeah.
Other people's appendages.
Straight in the nutsack.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like, he was reckless. You got to be responsible for your body, for your feet, your cleats, whatever, your boots. And it looked like, he was a bit reckless. And then it looked like even Sal Zizzo's kicking motion or... It helped Teixeira's foot aim it higher on his body.
I mean, it's a big loss losing Teixeira to that red card, and Hurtado picked up a yellow that's going to see him suspended in the next game.
There'll be no Teixeira.
No, and I mean, that's been the two guys for all your criticism of them over the last season. That's the two guys that's really lit it up for the Whitecaps in this tournament. So, I mean, it is a big blow. Trying to put a positive spin on it, they'll be back for the semi-final.
Yeah.
It was a performance. I mean, I didn't know what to expect from this game because you're having two teams in pre-season form. Neither team up to scratch, up to full fitness. In a lot of ways, and I asked Carl Robinson this, if you watched his video before he went to New York on the Whitecaps website, I asked Carl Robinson about, is it kind of disappointing to have another MLS team? But on the flip side, is it a good thing because you're both in pre-season form? And yeah, it is a bit of both. I was kind of surprised how good the game was, at least in the first half. It did dip a bit in the second. And then after the red card, the Whitecaps were just happy to kind of see it out, I think. But it wasn't as poor a performance as I thought it might be. But we know the tournament, the timing of it is going to change. But it's ridiculous that both teams only had a matter of weeks to prepare for this.
Yeah, and there's... So we talked earlier about, you know, we've had this long off season, and it's kind of... You've heard Robbo talk about this, I think, in some of his... in some of his interviews and stuff. It's this awkward thing where they're only allowed to have the players in at a certain time because of the union rules, which is really kind of difficult for a team when you go out of the playoffs, or you don't qualify for the playoffs, so your season's done the last week in October, and then you have this... I mean, players will come and maybe do some training or whatever. They have some postseason stuff, but this year it did not last very long. So you have this huge off season. And you're not able to get ready for this massive competition to represent your club. And I think MLS feels like they want their clubs to represent them well in this. And so it just seems really counterintuitive that we're only allowed to bring in the players that second last weekend in January to get ready for these games like a month later. Like it's like crazy. I know in other places around the world, when your off season, is usually 6 weeks or whatever. Like for Germany, for example. Your off-season is usually something like, let's say, 6 weeks. If you're in a major tournament, you're guaranteed 3 weeks off no matter when you go out and you join the side late. But like, there's like a set like amount of time. And but it's always with a mind of, okay, when is the next competition starting, right? It's not some kind of, I don't know, arbitrary thing. Now, I know, obviously, Red Bull went further in the MLS Cup playoffs into November. So they had, let's say, 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever less time off than we did. But it still would make more sense for MLS and the players' union to say, okay, you need to have 6 or 8 weeks off for sure, no matter what. But if you're in the Champions League, you can start earlier. And with the way the Champions League is going, with the new format for next year, we're going to be the sides from MLS are going to be joining in February. And so
I mean, they could be out a lot earlier,
exactly,
in the tournament than we've seen.
It's very likely that they'll be the seeded team and they'll be playing a quote unquote weaker side, but still their first games are going to be at this time.
It's going to be a weaker side though that is in mid-season form. I mean, anything can happen then.
So something they need to, if they believe in this,
the players would want to come back totally early.
And you have players who are, you could see, they're getting ready early on their own, or maybe they're getting ready early in small groups or whatever. But like by the rules, they are not allowed to have them in until a certain time. And so something needs to be looked at like that. Like,
well, the next agreement is up, they need to make the exception for CONCACAF.
Yeah, but okay, you can wait to the next agreement or you can do something now. Well, MLS.
Union MLS never does.
No, but union allows for certain things, like TAM. Right? They want to have the teams be better. They want to have them bring in better players. They want them to do better in this competition. So you have something like TAM. Surely you could go to the players' union and say, hey, can we talk about these parameters? Because they're hurting us in this area. It just seems very unfair to the players, the coaches, and the clubs. And it doesn't help the league.
I mean, even as well, like if the Whitecaps do get through to the semi, they're still not going to be in tip-top shape for facing a really tough Mexican side. And after the first leg of that game between Tigres and Pumas, it finished 1-1. Still don't really know who the Whitecaps would face in that semi-final. But either way, you're facing a team that's really, really in a stronger shape than the Whitecaps are just now.
Yeah, they've each played, at this point, they've each played like 7 league games in their clausura.
Yeah. Still a lot to play for. Can't take anything for granted. But the Whitecaps head into the second leg at BC Place on Thursday night in a really good position. Have to feel confident that they can get the job done. We've seen some horrible second legs, though, for the Whitecaps in recent years in various competitions, but the good thing about it is New York have to chase the game now, because as things stand, if it finishes 0-0, the Whitecaps are through. Even if New York do get an away goal, if the Whitecaps score first or if the Whitecaps score after that, it cancels it out, so it's still all to play for. So, I mean, the Whitecaps are going in strong, just have to hope they can get the job done.
That's the crucial thing. When you look at the loss to the Impact in the 2013 Voyageurs Cup Final, the loss to Toronto in this 2016 Voyageurs Cup Final, or the 2015 MLS Cup quarterfinal or whatever loss to Portland, all three, we didn't score a goal on the road. 0-0, we lost 1-0 to Toronto, and 0-0 against Portland. This time, we have an away goal. which is just helpful from a morale and a mentality standpoint.
Okay, so why don't we do predictions now? Right now, I'm in the lead because I got the first one right. Although we're not probably going to stop keeping track once I start losing. what do you guys think of the results on Thursday? What result do you have, and do you have the Whitecaps going forward, going through?
I think it's going to be another 1-1 draw in normal time. And I think that the Whitecaps will get it done on penalty kicks.
I think I'm going to stick with my prediction from the first game, and it's going to be 2-1 to Vancouver. I think we have the momentum. I think we have a good, not as good as away, but we have a good home record against Dead Bull, even though our last game was our only defeat to them. And I really think we're going to get the job done at home.
Yeah, I got the Whitecaps winning 1-0.
Nice.
So a confident bunch, maybe all three of us feel the Whitecaps are going to go through. We'll look at how that played out in next Sunday's show. And we'll be back with some more Whitecaps chat after these messages. Something is coming this
way. Safe Amp is putting on another all-ages show with Nick Fit, The Rambling Derelicts, Mirepoix, and Skumwade. Come to the Russian Hall to see this sweet show and pick up pieces by local visual artists. It's March 4th, starting at 7, and everyone's welcome.
Now, when you were starting out as a writer, you were black, impoverished, homosexual. You must have said to yourself, gee, how disadvantaged can I get?
Well, no, I thought I hit the jackpot.
Oh, great.
It was so outrageous, you could not go any further, you know. So you had to find a way to use it.
Curated by Barbara Chirinos in partnership with VIF Van City Theater, the annual Black History Month film series shines a spotlight on African North American film and history. This year's program encompasses music, political protest, spiritual, emotional, enterprise, and endeavor. The centerpiece of Black History Month at Van City Theater is the exclusive Vancouver premiere of the Academy Award-nominated documentary I Am Not Your Negro, screening from February 24th. Other highlights include Julie Dash's seminal Daughters of the Dust, the music films Molly Blues and Sign of the Times, and a new Canadian documentary about the untold history of black hockey players, Soul on Ice.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AFTN Soccer Show on CITR Radio, 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia. So before the break there, we were talking about the Champions League first leg match against New York and what to expect in the second leg. Of course, the big absence from that game on Wednesday, and the big absence which is now going to be for months, was Peruvian playmaker Jordi Reyna out with a broken fifth metatarsal in his foot.
As prescribed by Dr. Meisenheimer.
It was obvious when he went down, the way he went down, that was most likely what he had done. He had broken a metatarsal. Even the way he hobbled off the pitch, it was
wheelchaired off of.
Eventually he was wheelchaired off. But the way he hobbled to the sideline.
Yeah.
But it should take a normal person who's not an athlete. It should take like 6 to 8 weeks to recover from this. So you take those 6 to 8 weeks. That's roughly 2 months. And then on top of that, you gotta rehab the foot and the muscles in your leg.
You want to get the strength back. You want to be able to put weight on it. He wasn't at full match fitness when the injury happened.
And then you got to get match fit on top of that. So that's why they're saying
early summer. So we're looking probably end of June, start of July. Optimistically June, but I think realistically we're probably talking July.
So he'll be that mid-season signing that we've haven't had for a long time.
But it's a big loss in the number 10 role, because right now that number 10 spot's ravaged by injuries.
Yeah,
you've got Reyna out, you've got Belanius that's out with a pain in his knee that they just can't get to the bottom of, and it looks like he's going to be weeks and weeks away before he comes back. And then Nicholas Mosqueda as well, he's out. He has a hip injury. He's going to be the closest, but he's not going to be good to go, I don't think, for this game on Thursday.
And then you got to tear out too with the card for the upcoming game at least, and that's going to hurt for against the Red Bulls in the second leg.
And Hurtado out as well.
Yeah, and so it's you're right. You're wondering who's going to be playing in that spot. Hopefully Montero's back. And that makes a little Mateo is ready to go, actually.
I don't think Arloni is going to be able to start the game. I think he will be in the 18 and be used as a substitute. Mm. I think you're going to see Scooter, Fonzie, and maybe Barnes in the middle, if Barnes is not up top. But yeah, it's.
But Greg could be playing up top.
Greg could be playing up top with Barnes underneath him.
Maybe Bustos shows up and plays his natural position.
That would be glorious.
I mean, looking past this Thursday's game, the injury to Reyna with the MLS season starting a week today, it does leave us with a big hole to fill as to what we're going to do moving forward. Like, Bolaños was the guy that they were thinking was possibly going to fill in a little bit there. Then they brought in Montero, so they're looking at a Reyna-Montero partnership, kind of interchanging a little bit. But with Bolaños out, with Reyna out, do the Whitecaps make a panic addition now? And to do that, they're going to have to free up some cap space and roster space, so they're going to have to move someone on. But do they try and bring in a proper number 10 as a kind of gap filler till the summer?
I don't see it happening.
I don't see it happening either. I mean, I don't know if the question's been asked or if it's been answered in full, but I know March 1st is roster compliance day, obviously, but what do we know the status of David Edgar? Is he been...
Oh, I think he's going out for months.
No, but is he going to be used... You can get cap relief if the player's not going to play.
You can get cap relief if the player's not going to play for the season,
yes.
But they're targeting him to be back September, maybe even August. That was the initial plan. So unless they decide to write him off for the season, which I don't think they will, because if you do that, you then have to add another centre-back.
Yeah, then you're stuck there too.
Although you could add Sam DeWitt, who's injured himself just now, but he should be back soon. Or Francis DeVries, the draft pick. But looking at it, it's a bit of a mess, and it's come at a horrible time. All you can really hope for is, like, when the Whitecaps get all their guys back in the summer, they've got a really strong-looking lineup. Especially if the rumours about maybe adding someone like Atiba Hutchinson in the summer, just to kind of fill out the team even more. I mean, from July onwards, we could be doing a Seattle, we could be doing a Portland, in that we could be having a really strong late-season push.
Yeah, and that's why we might have to tread water
for now. But it's that spell up until then that we have to stay in the mix.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be tricky, obviously, is you look at especially Seattle last year, you look at especially at LA in previous years, who have had horrendous starts to seasons, and then from June, July onwards, they play lights out and have great runs. You're right, though. We do have this hole. You know, listening to Robbo talk, he's talking about bringing in another player. It sounds like it'll be a central midfield player. And so, yeah, with that not happening yet, and with Reyna down, it's the holes in our depth are everywhere, right?
Yeah, essentially, my feeling is right now they're going to have to play lights out defending. They're going to have to play complete mistake free defending in order to have any chance into these games.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Well, the thing is yes, Wednesday we had a few issues because of the there was lack of backtracking, especially on the goal from defending on the left side. But overall, I don't think we played horribly defending. I think probably the weakest points was the right back spot where Jake made his debut. But you got Wayne Williams ready to come in. Hopefully, he'll be ready to go by the beginning of the season, and that might be what we're looking for. And that if that back four with those two midfielders in front can be solid in front of that goalkeeper, I think they have a chance to maybe hit some counterattacks, and they're gonna have to play like that essentially for most of the year. So people are gonna be not going to be enjoying the football, but hopefully get the results out of it.
Yeah, it would be surprising to not see Williams as the starting right back.
Oh, it will, yeah.
Potentially as early as this coming Thursday.
And of course, we've got the Champions League game second leg this Thursday. 3 days later, the MLS season kicks off. Philadelphia Union are heading to BC Place. And in a lot of ways, it's not the most glamorous first kit game. If you were going to pick opponents, you don't really want a team like Philadelphia. On the flip side, though, you're getting a weak team a couple of days after a grueling Champions League game.
No, well, you don't want like your biggest rival in the opening kick, because honestly, you could sell that game later on in the year. The thing is, you're going to sell out the Philadelphia game for the Whitecaps at least, And so the excitement's already there for the opening game. That opening game, say it was like in the past years, Montreal or TFC, those games will come later on in the year. And so that game will be, you know, a sellout in the summer when maybe you don't have that.
Here's the thing. I don't know how much we've talked about this in the past. I totally agree with you, Steve. The first kick in itself should sell itself, should be a big game, return to play, return to the league. However, we have been, as supporters, we've been told that they've needed it to be a big team in order for it to sell out in the past. And this year, I'm guessing the only reason that they were comfortable with it not being Seattle, Portland, Montreal, Vancouver, or New York team is because we do have the Champions League matches, and I think they were hoping that a good result in the Champions League will enable them to do a good number, a sellout ideally, for a first kick against Philadelphia. I agree with you in part, Michael, about it's nice to play, you know, a team that didn't do amazing last year, that wasn't awesome last year. But I don't know if I'd say Philadelphia is weak. I'd say they have some question marks.
Weakest teams maybe weaker. In MLS. Weaker.
Right, and they might be feeling the same about playing.
Oh, yeah,
they will be.
Yeah, they're playing a Western Conference team that didn't make the playoffs.
Right. And is injury riddled
and playing 3 days after a Champions League game.
So, yeah, I think it's going to be a stern challenge, honestly.
Do you see Carl Robinson making a lot of changes from the lineup that goes out on Thursday to the lineup that goes out on Sunday? The players should be fit enough to go two games in that period of time, but
I think he's got no choice. I think he's going to have to go with a similar lineup because there won't be that many options.
No, Teixeira can't play, Hurtado can't play.
Yeah, I'm sure those guys will come in, but I'm talking about overall.
Waston's out as well because Waston's out, suspended.
So Dean's going to play for sure. So there's three players. I would not be surprised if three other guys who are not starting on the Thursday do start on the Sunday. I think there will be. I think you should expect at least half the team to be different with the short turnaround and with the different suspensions and injuries that we have.
Well, it's certainly going to be a test of Whitecaps' depth early on. And we'll be back next Sunday to talk about how that played out. So now it's time for our wavelength section of the show. This is the section where we play a football-related song by a proper band. So not a football chant, an actual song by an actual band. And this week, you'll be glad to know I've kind of moved out of the 80s and I've gone to 2003.
It's a big jump. It's a good year, though.
Yeah. English pop trio I Ludacris. They're a band that's had a career from the early 80s.
So still an 80s
band. Yeah, so still an 80s band, really. And they've reformed recently as well. But they've done a number of different football songs over the year. We're going to bring you one just now, and I think it's a very apt one for how the Whitecaps are going to be this season. Even last season as well, there was a lot of calls last year when things weren't going well for Robbo to get the subs on.
Yeah.
And that's a common sort of shout at football, get the subs on. So the band wrote a song about that. It's called Bring On The Substitute, and it's just about bringing on a young player off the bench to kind of show the old ones how to get the job done. So this is from I Ludacris' 2003 album, The Museum of Installation. You can also find it on their compilation, 20 Years in Show Business, that came out. It's a double CD that came out in 2007. So let's hear now from I Ludacris, and this is Bring On The Substitute.
His palms are damp, his muscles otherwise. Bloody sad.
Bring on the substitute there from I, Ludacris, from their 2003 album, The Museum of Installation. And like I said, they had a number of football songs over the years, so we're going to bring you a lot of those down the line. Interesting thing that happened after last week's show, we played the song Love on the Terraces by Serious Drinking,
yeah.
And I didn't expect to then have a Twitter conversation with the guitarist of the band the next day.
Yeah, no, I saw that somebody
Aidan Rantoul found him on Twitter.
Yeah, pegged him into the conversation that he followed the thing and he saw
it. Yeah, they had a chat about it. So that was a fun and unexpected thing that happened out the show. But hey, anything can happen here at AFTN. The
music and football is a small world.
And as we always say, for us at AFTN, football and music go hand in hand. Had a lot of chats on Twitter this week, actually, about football songs and music and different things. And Russell Beresford, at Squad Player on Twitter, must follow Twitter account, really great sense of humour as well. A guy that we keep meaning to have on the show as well, but we've just never got him on yet. But, I mean, we were chatting about that as well, and he was saying just how intertwined in the past football and music was. And it was especially in the 80s and when the fanzine scene came out in the UK back then. A lot of fanzines, including AFTN Away From The Numbers, named after songs. We're named after a song by The Jam, a B-side from that mod band. And it went hand in hand. We used to give away a free music fanzine insert that we wrote called Ultracore, just about the Fife music scene. And I just think it goes hand in hand. People are really enjoying this section, so we've got a lot of great songs to come. But enough about that. We'll get back to the Whitecaps and football chat soon, after these messages.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire, Cheetos, fleece material, and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute. Just visit citr.ca/discorder/contribute. You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca. Forever local and forever free.
Lincoln Alexander was a Black Canadian who achieved much in politics. The child of Jamaican immigrants, he served in the Royal Canadian Air Force during World War II. He graduated from the Osgoode Hall Law School in 1953 and practiced at a number of firms for more than a decade. In 1968, he ran in Canada's federal election in the Hamilton West electoral district. He won and became Canada's first black member of parliament. He served four consecutive terms before stepping down in 1980. In 1985, he was appointed Lieutenant Governor of Ontario, becoming the first black Canadian to hold a vice-regal position. Alexander passed away on October 19, 2012. In December 2013, Lincoln Alexander Day was made a law in Ontario and is held on January 21st. His wife, Marnie Beale Alexander, is currently working to make it a national holiday for Canada. This has been a Black History Month PSA brought to you by CITR.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AFTN Soccer Show on CITR Radio. So for this final segment of the show, we're going to turn our attention away from the Whitecaps MLS team and look at the USL team, WFC2. Now, there's a big announcement last week.
Is this team moving?
No, that's the other big announcement. Oh. That's probably going to be in a year's time we'll be talking about that. Head coach Alan Koch left for Pastures New in Cincinnati in December. Since moving there, he's become the head coach of Cincinnati. So folks thought it was a little bit strange when Alan first up sticks to lose a head coaching role to be an assistant coach, albeit one that was also scouting head director and stuff like that as well. But it's paid off for Alan. He's now the head coach at FC Cincinnati. And the Whitecaps had a lengthy process of looking to find his replacement. So the Whitecaps finally made their announcement on Monday. New head coach is a promotion for Whitecaps residency under 18 coach Rich Fagan. And Rich Fagan fought off a lot of competition. There's a lot of people interested in the position, some with more experience than him. Whitecaps 2 assistant coach Pamadou Ka was kind of in the running. Former Whitecaps player from the USL days of bygone years, and former Ottawa Fury assistant coach Martin Nash, he was also in the running.
He's our captain. He's our captain. He's our captain.
He was our captain.
Yeah, true.
And also Tommy Wheeldon from Calgary Foothills was in the mix, which would have been interesting with the rumours that swirled about the team possibly moving to Calgary at some time in the future. But Rich Fagan was the man that got the job. I'm delighted for it. We've got a little bit of continuity. I know there's been some kind of mixed reactions to it. Steve, you kind of wanted maybe a little bit of a different face.
No, I like Rich Fagan as a coach. I think he's done an awesome job with the U18s. I don't really have a serious problem with it, but sometimes you want that different voice in there. But I guess in a way, maybe that wasn't probably what the Whitecaps were looking for, because like they've said in the past, that they like having from the U14 level all the way up to the senior level, they want everybody playing the same way. So in a way, it kind of makes sense. So I've kind of turned around on it, but I still think that it would be nice to have different voices in during the developmental process.
Yeah, it's nice to see that there is kind of a pyramid to how things are working.
That's what I like.
Yeah, I wasn't completely against it, but there was just like a feeling that, you know, it was, I think, having like a guy like Alan who came from SFU kind of gave it a different, people, you learn better when you're getting different vibes going along the same road. Like you're still learning the same pyramid, but it's a different voice, basically. That's all I wanted.
The thing with Rich Fagan as well is he's been involved with the club since 2010. He's had like guys like Caden Chung, Tommy Gardner, Davey Norman, the Baldissimos. He's worked with them since they were like 9, 10 years old. He's moved through the club from the prospects program to under 14, under 16, under 18.
Yeah.
He took the under 16s to USSDA quarterfinal for the first time in the club's history, to the under 18s to the USSDA championship game last year for the second time in their history. And if decisions had been made to release players, for example, like Alfonso Davies that we talked about in our extra podcast, that might have made the difference, and the Whitecaps could have been crowned under 18 national champion, so he would have had that on his resume.
Yeah.
But he's well with this group. He knows the group inside and out.
That's the good thing about it, that he knows what's coming up. So he's worked with these guys before. So in a way, it probably was the right decision.
Yeah, because I think that's one of the things about Alan's time is that I think he also wanted to develop players that he brought in, right? And I think with an internal guy, we have someone who I think will have more of a determination to develop players that we're already developing. Not that Alan did none of that, but I think it'll be exponentially more with Craig.
That's another thing we were mentioning
before. Sorry, Rich, with Rich.
This is another thing we were mentioning before we started recording that I personally think that winning with older players is useless when you're in a developmental league. I'd rather win with young players and get those young players on the pitch. You could have an older player here and there to steady the team, but I want like a lot of youth on the WFC 2 team.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I think, yeah, you want development. It is difficult. I don't know if you guys follow, you know, Montreal FC or, you know, and how they did. They took they were playing like U18s all the time and getting smashed.
Yeah, their first that's year fine. And, but they're learning. Those kids are learning right, at that level.
Right. Well, then, yeah.
But you can also say Whitecaps too learn, because we got smashed in the first year and then Alan turned it around in year two. But a lot of that was just through better recruitment and having longer with the team.
Yeah.
Because when Alan Koch took over, he took over in February, obviously, as has Rich Fagan, and didn't have much time to put the squad together. But that was a first-time squad. Rich is inheriting a squad. And although,
seven players?
Well, although it's not all the players haven't been announced, there's a number of players signed that haven't been announced. Some old faces returning, some new faces altogether, some faces that we'll have seen on other teams as well. But before we come to talk of how Whitecaps 2 might do this year, I got a chance to catch up with Rich Fagan at Whitecaps 2 training on Tuesday, so let's hear our chat with him now. So Rich, does it feel any different being out there? Same group of players that you're used to with a lot of them, but does it feel any different being at the different level?
I mean, what I would say is the tempo is it's much quicker. There just seems to be a little bit more kind of intensity in the players and how they approach things. Not to say that in the residency they're not focused and they're not professional about how they approach things, but it's just amped up a little bit more.
You've been with the club since 2010. It's been like a natural progression for you through the ranks. Did this just feel like a natural fit for you?
Yeah, it did. I mean, they've been supportive of me since day one. I mean, anytime there's been an opportunity, they've looked internally first. Not to say that they haven't looked outside, obviously, but they've always given me a fair chance, and it's been up to me to make good of it.
When Alan announced that he was leaving in middle of December, like right away, did you know you wanted the job?
No, if I'm being honest, it didn't cross my mind until maybe later on. But after speaking with Gordon and Carl and the other first team staff, Martin, we thought it could be a possibility.
Something which I'm kind of working on down the road is the fact that the Whitecaps are very unique, not just in MLS, but kind of really in North American soccer right now, in that it's a UK coaching staff. And like your appointment as well at high level, but even when you're at the 18s and then Adam and then Ernie at 14s as well, does it just feel a more natural kind of culture with you all being from the same country, same kind of page, I guess?
If I'm honest, I don't know if I've necessarily thought about it. I mean, it's there, it's obvious for sure, but I mean, I think, I'm not sure if that's why we've created the culture that we have. I mean, it's a good one, but I'm not necessarily sure that's why.
Now, you know a lot of these guys. You've been with guys like Caden and Tommy, Davey Norman, since the prospects days, and you've kind of moved through them through the ranks. Having a chance now to coach them at this level, it must, like, the familiarity must have played a big part in you getting the job. But how much are you looking forward to seeing these guys push now at this next level?
They're at an age in their development now where they're ready to step in and make a difference, and I think that's the important thing. They can make a difference, and there's players that are coming up from the residency now that are in the 16s, pushing into the 18s, the 18s into this environment. I mean, our residency players are ready to push on and make a difference at the next level. It just takes time.
The squad which we have just now, it's a really young squad. There's some familiar faces. There's a couple of new guys kind of appeared. I know not all the signings have been announced yet either, but what are you expecting from this team this year? Last year, obviously, you're following on from a team that made it to the Western Conference Championship, yep. but I know this team's ultimately about development.
Yep.
How do you see this season working out? Is it going to be kind of a bit of a tough slog because it is a young team?
Yeah, potentially, but the young players, as I said, are ready to make a difference. They're ready to step up. They want to step into the team and they want to be able to make a difference every week. And the older guys, the ones that have more experience, have been absolutely brilliant with them. I mean, that's the first thing I noticed yesterday when I walked into the change room was just the atmosphere from the music to the conversation to, you know, the older guys speaking with the younger players. That makes a huge difference. So, I mean, if they have success, which I think they will, that'll be a big part of it.
And like the whole Whitecaps organisation, with what's happening just now with the academy centres, and you've obviously worked closely with that. I was up here, but I saw you were working with, it was the Alberta Academy. Like, the whole thing that the Whitecaps have in place just now, you look at the Canadian under-20s and like how they've really struggled just now, but the Whitecaps Academy programme must really be one of the ways forward for Canadian soccer.
Yeah, we hope so. I mean, we've got a strong influence in several provinces now, and they're embracing us, which is great. So, I mean, there's been good coaches have been put in places that are doing good work. I mean, the difference in the player from last year to this year, for me, he's even improved. So, I mean, the club's doing a good job of getting the Whitecaps way out there. And, I mean, Canada can only benefit from it.
The whole sort of setup of USL, it's been hard in a lot of ways for the fans to really buy into the club, which I find baffling because it's like it's the future of the club here. What would your message be to the fans if they're kind of on the fence as to whether to come out and watch these guys this year?
Well, the younger players, the ones that have come through the residency program, they've made up a good portion of the youth national teams leading up to the U17s for several years now. They're at the age now where they're graduating into the USL and they're ready to make a difference. So if you want to see Canada's best and brightest young stars, I can't think of a better place to come and see them play.
Thank you so much, Rich. Yep. So Rich Fagan there. We always love to have a little bit of Scott and Scott action here on the AFTN Soccer Show. And as I asked Rich there, it's a very kind of unique situation at the Whitecaps. When you look at other teams, not just in Major League Soccer, but in USL, NASL, just throughout the game over here in Canada and the US, the Whitecaps stand out because they have primarily an all UK coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
At MLS level, you've got a Welshman, a Scotsman, and an Englishman, which makes a good joke.
Mm-hmm.
You also have a Scottish goalkeeping coach now, Stuart Kerr, excellent addition. USL level, you've got Scotsman in charge, Rich Fagan.
Yes.
Englishman yes. assistant, Steve Madeley. Rich was the under-18 head coach. Adam Day, who's English, is the under-16 head coach, who we expect to move up to under-18 level now. Robert Earnshaw, Welshman, under-14 coach,
yeah.
and I expect him to move up to probably under-16 level.
Yeah, a lot of English.
It's just it's a unique situation to have over here. And I don't know how Canadian coaches feel about that, because are they maybe not getting a chance to coach at the higher level because they're going for guys with an accent?
At every level.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I think in the Whitecaps talk a lot about developing Canadian players. I think it would be fair to question the role they're playing in developing Canadian coaches or lack thereof. Not that they haven't had any Canadian coaches in their development program over the years or dual citizen Canadian coaches, but
I think it's a cyclical thing. I think eventually there will be more Canadian coaches down the road. It's just a matter of being the right time and the right coach.
I think, too, it has to do with who is making these decisions or who's influencing these decisions. And one would assume that your head coach of your club, in this case a Welshman, has a large role to play in that.
The flip side of all that, though, is that you've got guys that have come from the same background, guys that have grown up living and breathing football, they're on the same page, they have the same kind of playbook. So I think that helps the club in that regard. But I do think we'll see, with the way that the academies are kind of going across the country, we will see more Canadian coaches starting to come through. And from those academies, we're going to see a lot of young players coming through as well. And it's going to be a really young WFC2 team this season. We won't talk too much about them just now because the season's still weeks away. First pre-season friendly, the first time for guys to really get a good chance to see them play and what this team might look like this year under Rich Fagan will be on Friday, February 3rd when they take on UBC in a friendly. The following week they also then take on SFU as well up the mountain. But it's going to be a really young team that the Whitecaps have. And I don't think we can expect to hit the heights that we saw last year, Western Conference Championship, all that kind of stuff, 10-game unbeaten run to start the season. But it's a squad that will work together, they'll fight together, they're all around about the same age. We might be surprised. These guys are playing for contracts, ultimately.
And the thing is one thing that I don't think we've mentioned yet is that with them being such a young team, what this does for guys like Marco Bustos and Ben McKendry is puts them in leadership roles. And that will help them in the long term because it basically sets them up for a confidence boost or a better skill set when they move up to the first team.
It will be interesting to see which... One would assume that one player will be loaned on a season-long loan.
Yeah, with the new roster rules, which I don't know if it's all official or not, but they're going up to 30 from 28. Used to be 30, but you can have 30 as long as you've got at least two homegrowns. And then there's a mysterious 31st one, which can happen if you loan a player for the season to your USL affiliate. And that did exist last year as the 29th guy, which was Marco Carducci.
Which was never announced. Publicly announced, yeah. It's kind of awkward. So hopefully that doesn't happen this year. Hopefully it's very public and everyone knows what's going on.
Transparency.
Well, I mean, I was at Whitecaps training on Tuesday and I was at the intra-squad game Friday past and Debbie Flores was there. Ben McKendry, Marco Bustos played in the intra-squad game. I mean, I think those guys are going to be heavily involved. Spencer Ritchie as well.
Yeah.
One of them you have to think is going to be the season-long loan.
From your time in Wales, is Davey Flores 100% fit?
I think he is. And I say I think he is because we haven't really seen enough of him to really tell.
To know if he's
fit. He played the full 90 minutes in the intra-squad game.
Oh, right, on Friday.
Yeah,
a couple Fridays
Friday past. Yeah. So... I mean, and he was training fine when I saw him this week.
Which is that's a telltale sign that, I mean, he's fit, but he didn't appear in any of the six preseason games.
You have to feel they might want to move him back to a club in Honduras, somewhere else, maybe in Central America, but probably back to Honduras just for another season-long loan.
And if you do that, you don't want to have him injured in the game or like that.
So... We'll see what happens there. We'll see what happens with the USL team. We'll bring you a lot of coverage on that over the course of the year on the AFTN Soccer Show. Just want to say congratulations again to Rich Fagan on getting the job. It's a guy we've known and talked to for years now.
Top guy.
And yeah, the players really like him. The players really respect him. I mean, Marco Bustos tweeted out how pleased he was to see that he got the job. And Marco Bustos played some of his best football in recent years under Rich Fagan and under 18. So have high hopes as to what he might do for Marco's career this year. Anyway, that's all the chat for this week's episode of the show. Just before we go, just let everyone know where they can find you online.
You can find me, my name is Steve, on Twitter at WhitecapsBeat.
On Twitter, I'm at Zachary AM and I'm part of the movement Curva Collective.
And you can find Curva Collective on Twitter at Curva Collective and on Instagram...
At Curva Collective.
At Curva Collective as well. We also have an Instagram account, at AFTN Soccer. Haven't put one thing out from that yet, because I don't really fully understand how Instagram works. But what we do use a lot is Twitter. And you can find me, Michael McCall, on Twitter, at AFTN Canada. Read all our stuff online, AFTN.ca, away from the numbers. You can also subscribe to our new premium podcast that we're going to bring out one or two times a month. All the details are up on the site about that. $30 a year, $3 a month. It's a way to help support the site, support AFTN, help us to continue to bring the excellent coverage of the Whitecaps and the local soccer scene to you. So please check that out and help support us at AFTN.
And check us out on Mixlr as well for the odd game. Check Twitter to see when we're broadcasting.
Yeah, we've been broadcasting live on Mixlr. That is mixlr.com/AFTN. But anyway, until next time on the AFTN Soccer Show, as always, thanks for listening. Take care. And mon the Caps.
Going to your first match is an experience you never forget. The atmosphere of what's going on around the pitch looks beautiful, and you always look and go, wow, I'd love to play here one day. If you get the bug, it's going to stay with you for life.